Hello, No Code Nation. I'm Ayush, and you're listening to My No Code Story, the only No Code podcast focused on real people and their authentic stories. Welcome to the future of the indie movement, where creators, freelancers, automators, and founders build products, all without writing a single line of code. If you have a business idea and you're just learning about no code tech, this is the best companion podcast for your journey. Learn from some of the best minds in no code. Let's go. Before we get started, I have a small favor to ask. If you like what you hear on today's episode, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It helps more people benefit from the pod and lets me know that we're on the right track. Now, onto the show. All right. My guest on the show today is Michael Ioannidou. Michael is a CTO by profession. He's also a YouTuber and has a phenomenal YouTube channel. If you're interested in the intersection of no-code and Web3, I would highly recommend you check that out. And in 2020, he co-organized the world's biggest hackathon together with the European Commission, hashtag EU versus virus. Check that out. Michael's also a board member at Austrian Startups and is advising startups and blockchain projects on how to succeed with high probability. And he often says, looking at the power of no-code tools, he wondered why, as a developer, he made his life so complicated, writing all these things with code. I have no doubt you'll get a ton out of this discussion. Here's my conversation with Michael Ioannidou.
Hey everyone, I'm Michael, and this is my no-code story. Michael, welcome to the show. I'm so excited to have you on. And I've been following your work. Like, we were just talking about this for the last like 3 to 4 months. And it's so great to meet virtually for now, but hopefully in person at some point. I've been admiring your work from afar, but you're an avid no coder and Web3 individual. And your whole tagline is demystifying Web3. But I love how you're coming at it from so many different angles. Like it feels like you're really looking at the people in the ecosystem and trying to figure out what someone who might not have the benefit of having worked in tech or might not have had the benefit of being around the Web3 space, what might be going on in their minds. And I really feel like you're kind of inside the mind of your listeners, and your very successful YouTube channel is a testament to that. So congrats on everything and welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. You're very kind to me, yes, because you're putting it in a nice frame. So thank you for that. Actually, it's demystifying technology because it's blockchain and no code as well, and app creation. So, you know, trying to put everything together. And the reason why I'm doing Web3 or blockchain topics is because I got super excited about it, and you know, I spend a lot of time investigating, so I added that to the channel. But it doesn't mean that no code is not interesting. On to the contrary, because blockchain totally profits from no code tools and no code approach. So no code tools exist already for the blockchain. So I thought, hey, perfect fit, right? Let's combine them together. Of course, I'm just one guy, right? So I cannot create 50 videos a week, but I have some big plans, right? So make sure to stick around, but some big plans. And I'm very passionate about empowering people, right? So I figured out, two years ago, I believe COVID was the trigger. I figured out that basically I want to help as many people as possible achieve their goals. And in my particular case, it's building digital businesses, right? Because I'm a tech person. I know how to build digital businesses, startups, you know. So I thought, hey, let's help as many people as possible. That's my life goal. And the best way to achieve that is to make videos and courses and, you know, be at events, right? Reach people, right? Because if I just do it in my small community at home, then it's not a lot of people, right, that I can help. So that's why I do YouTube and no code I do because 99.7% of the world population can't code, right? And that's a lot of people. Again, a lot of people can help a lot of people, right? Learn how to do digital software and digital products. So basically this sums it up almost.
Yeah, and I would encourage anyone that's listening right now to subscribe to Michael's YouTube channel. We'll link to it in the show notes. But I'm really excited to get into what exactly demystifying technology means. I know we talked about crypto, we talked about Web3, we talked about, you know, no-code technology and so on. Are these areas that you're just generally interested in? And for someone else that has been interested in crypto and has been interested in Web3, how should they feel about kind of the wind getting taken out of the sails a little bit from crypto and Web3 right now? It looks like, you know, with everything that's going on the past few weeks and months, people are just a little bit, how do you call it, not as motivated to be in the space. So how are you coming at this from your unique vantage point?
No, I totally feel it, feel you, and understand also the people that feel demotivated maybe. But the thing is, basically, blockchain, the way I talk about it on my channel, I'm not talking about prices at all, right? I'm not talking about coins or something like this. Sometimes I talk about NFT projects that I think are pushing the boundary of the tech, which, I, you know, that's cool, but not because you should invest in that thing. So I'm not talking about prices or, you know, or that stuff. I'm talking about building things, building software tools that help other people. So from that point of view, nothing has changed. Actually, it got better, right? Right. So Avalanche is better than before. They have subnets. Ethereum will get better soon. Bitcoin will always stay the same, which all of this, all of this has benefits, right? So for me, I don't really care about the price. I mean, when it comes to my channel, okay, personally, obviously, yeah, I have to take care about the price because I invest some of my own funds. But coming from the builder point of view, mindset, it's now the best time to build, you know, because now you have time, you are not FOMOing into any coin, right? Because everything is going down. So you'd be like, okay, what do I do with my time? I build something. I learn the technology. I learn Web3. I understand coins. I understand NFTs. I understand smart contracts, right? So I understand what are the use cases for the blockchain, because it's still very vague, I have to tell you. And this is a video I'm working on right now. And by the time you see this video, it might already be on my channel. And I found five use cases that would definitely, definitely change the world. And I'm not kidding you right now. But most people don't talk about those use cases because most people talk about prices and investing and speculating and all this crazy stuff. And yeah, sure, most people understand that maybe, you know, some products or some DeFi products might replace the stock exchange because it's kind of obvious, mm-hmm. right? But that's just a tiny fraction of what we can actually do with the technology. So that's what I want to talk about. And I want to show people how to do it as well.
Yeah, and it's fairly obvious that you're so super excited about the space and you're super excited about Web3 technology in particular and decentralized technology that's on the blockchain. And I remember this interview that I was watching recently, I think it was a couple of weeks back, by Marc Andreessen. And he was talking about how after the internet, the Web3 and blockchain set of technologies is the first time that he's really felt excited about some technology the same way that he was during the time of the internet. And for some people that might be listening to the channel, they may not actually have been around or been using the internet back during its infancy, right? So they might have started using the internet when it was more mature. Do you kind of see things the same way? And if so, what is something specific about Web3 and the blockchain set of technologies that makes you think that this is something that will kind of power things like you're talking about, like a DeFi tech enabling a stock exchange of the future? What makes you so confident that that will actually come to pass?
Yeah. Marc Andreessen is searching for the mosaic moment. Yes, I understand that because he made a ton of money, right, back in the day, and exactly. And now he's I think he has it figured out. I mean, I think he still has it. You know, the feeling for the right time, and timing is a very important thing. By the way, if you're watching this video and you're a founder, you want to create a company or a product, then timing is super important, right? And I want to use that also to explain, to get to your question, because if you launch too early, you're too early, okay? You have dot-com bubble, nobody believes in it, it's useless, you know, we're going to shut it down. Yes, maybe it's even illegal, the internet, right? If you can Google that, right? The internet had also its challenges, and the regulators wanted to shut it down, you know, or maybe make it useful only for, you know, state-owned businesses, right? But it didn't happen, right? And it got public and everyone used it. And imagine how hard it was that back in the day to actually get connected to the internet. You had to buy a super expensive computer in order to use the internet at all. I mean, it was very hard entry barrier, right? And back in the day, to say that the internet would be everywhere, it was very hard, you know, because you had to really be a visionary, you know, because you have to imagine every household who didn't need a computer in their life suddenly will have one at home, and then suddenly they would find value in surfing on the internet. Wow, it's so hard, you know, like, oh, I don't know about that, right? But okay, for me, it's kind of obvious. When I grew up, I had internet when I was like, what was I, 10 or 11 or so. So for me, it's kind of normal. But if I would grow up like the generation before, I might be already be skeptical, right? Now, here is the same exact situation with the blockchain, right? And with Web3, because, you know, it is nuts. People think it's illegal. Maybe it should be completely regulated. Maybe it should be state-owned. All the wallets have to have KYC, all the fund, right? But of course, it will have massive use cases, which is why I'm doing this video today. I'm working on it in the background before and after this video, yeah. Right? Recording. And I think we can't even imagine all the use cases or the biggest ones. We have some in mind, and I found some by doing a lot of research, but I think there are more than I can't even think of, you know? And they will come with two things, right? With technology improving, because as a tech person, I can tell you the blockchain is still very primitive. You cannot do a lot of things with it compared to normal programming languages, right? It's very, very limited. That's why also the projects are pretty limited in what they can do. If you really dissect it, it's just moving numbers around and storing ownership of IDs. Because when you buy NFTs, you just buy the number. You don't even buy the picture and stuff. That's another layer on top of it. It's not even on the blockchain most of the time anyway. So the technology is still very limited. And the other thing is, once the technology reaches maturity and gets more features and is faster, and we have decentralized databases, decentralized edge computing and all, then people come with creativity, right? And they want to make some money, right? So they will use the technology to create services that we don't even imagine. And that's why the whole space will grow. And also because of channels like, you know, like the big ones that already exist, and hopefully mine also, that teaches people how, you know, and why. And that all that together will make the market grow and will bring actual value to the people. But just let me summarize, because most people are still confused what the blockchain is. It is not for speculating and all. Sure, that's one use case that people put on top of it, because with the simple tech we have, it's possible, right? It's possible to move money around. That's super easy, right? But really, the blockchain is all about storing ownership of stuff, yes? And so once you get that, you start to think, okay, wait, what do I own everywhere? Where do I have ownership of things? And who is storing that data right now? Is it the state, a company, right? And why is it not me? Why is not my data, right? Why is it their data? It's a bit weird because it's my property, okay? Or it's mine, right? So that becomes very exciting. And once you move down that rabbit hole, I think you open your eyes much more and faster to what the blockchain actually is capable of and actually will deliver to us.
That's such a great way to think about it. And I think also one of the things that I remember from that Mark Andreessen clip was he was talking about so many hundreds of thousands of engineers and smart people coming together to make the internet what it has now become, like with, you know, unlimited live streaming and with, you know, bandwidth and scalable cloud solutions and deployment and so on. And he was talking about how a really large group of smart people are now starting to work on blockchain and related technologies because, like you said, so much of it is not developed or hashed out yet. And when engineers and other smart people kind of attack this, they're looking at this and seeing a million opportunities that they can use to make a mark for themselves and so on. So I'm kind of paraphrasing there, but I think the way you put it in terms of thinking about ownership rather than thinking about, you know, crypto or smart contracts or a specific use case, thinking about the underlying function is a really great way to start to understand and grasp the technologies.
Yeah, I want to add to that. I want to add to that that somebody,
yeah,
I think someone else from Andreessen Horowitz, I don't remember the name, they went to an event and they mentioned clearly that there is a distinction between Web 1, Web 2, and Web 3 and what the distinction is. And that was also very revealing and kind of approving what I just said before, because they said that Web 1 was just reading data, right? Somebody put some ugly looking website and you were able to read, but that's it. You couldn't collaborate whatsoever and leave a comment, or, you know, that was far away. And then Web 2 was suddenly you have a user account, you can have friends, you can leave comments, you can post things and all. It got crazy with social media. And then, but all this data that now you can create right? Because the Web2 was about all about creation. Like this is how you have all the content creation going on, right? But all this data now that we create belongs not to us, right? Not even my YouTube videos belong to me, right? Not even, they belong to the platform, right? And now with Web3, it's all about ownership. You know, so that will disrupt a little bit of businesses and also especially states, right? Countries. And they will not like that at the beginning, but they will figure out. And if you want, we can talk about that later. They will figure out why it's actually even better for them to give up the data, to give it to the user, because ultimately, unfortunately, they will get more data. I can explain that if you want, but it's a fascinating paradigm there.
Let's get into that, because I've started to see a trend, and I talked recently on the podcast about this with another founder that was trying to do something in the DeFi space. And one of the trends that I've started to notice now is that, especially in countries like India, I have family in India. Mm-hmm. I recently traveled there, and what they're trying to do there is they're basically tokenizing currency without using Web3 tech. They're basically creating unique IDs and having everything go through a central system mandated, mm-hmm. right? So any online transaction actually happens through a unified payments interface. And I've started to see more and more governments in certain countries try to come to the middle and say, you know, if we're going to allow people to build stuff in crypto and using Web3 tech, the data all needs to be controlled through a central entity. How do you, let's get into that a little bit more. And I'm curious to hear your thoughts on how that's all going to pan out.
Yeah, I mean, we learned at university, at technical university, that, you know, there will be more and more data collected, but as long as it's not in one place, it's okay-ish because it's hard to consolidate it, right? So the example was that if you have a lot of cameras in the city, but the cameras don't all belong to the same entity, right? It's not all state, but it belongs to the shops and all, you know, then it's impossible to create a big picture of where people are moving, because you would have to have access to each individual camera, which is not doable, right? Because it's not yours and stuff. But as long as it's, as soon as it is centralized and you have full access to all of these things, you can create everything, right? You have perfect view of where a person is moving and from A to B in the whole city, right? And here's the same situation. You can imagine that with the person walking around, but you can also imagine that with coins being sent around, right? And once it's centralized in one mega database, then it's very easy to, you know, to block it or to figure out where they went shopping from the state, right? And that's a bit strange because so far, this is not doable, right? They can't like say, hey, Michael was at this very strange shop that they are selling weed, but he bought something. We don't know what he bought there, but he bought something. Yeah, but maybe just giving you a weird example, because these shops sometimes accept packages from, you know, from DHL and UPS. So maybe I just paid that, okay? And it doesn't have to do anything with weed. I was just, because they are close to me, you know, I just gave them the package, right? So they might think I'm a drug addict or God knows what, and they might reduce my or increase my social insurance or whatever, right? Because they have full access on all of this stuff. So this is a risk that I don't fancy. So I don't know how to get around this because states have a lot of power and they would love this system, right? They would love to have this capability, right? And so how do we take that away from them? Well, I don't know, right? We vote for other people that don't want this, right? We vote for the right politicians. We make sure to call our representatives. We make sure, you know what I mean? Like you have to be active, right? But other than that, right? Of course, people want more power and more power and so on. And we as the population, we want to take power away, right? We want to own, because the ownership, right? Web3, own our own data, right? And have more privacy. And that's what it's exactly opposed to the state. So I have to say, I don't know exactly how this will end up, but there is a chance of a lot of stress between these two parties that want freedom and control. Yeah.
Which is not always a bad thing. I think having some stress in the ecosystem actually ends up creating better solutions for all of us at the end of the day, right? Once all of that kind of gets figured out. So I'm with you there.
I think can say something about that, because the internet was exactly the same, right? They were afraid that information can flow freely and they don't have any control. Ultimately, they have more control, right? Because now we can share everything and we have more freedom, but actually they have full access on the internet. And in some cases, they can even decrypt encrypted communication. Oh my God, right? And there was an article back in the day. So I think with the blockchain and with the blockchain and smart contracts and with owning your own data, it will be the same, just that we don't get it yet. So in my opinion, sure, let the people own their data. But now let me give you an example because it's mind-blowing. Let's say you own all your data, the health tracker data, right? From the health tracker doesn't belong to the health tracker company anymore. It belongs to you because it's in your wallet address, right? So you have full access. You can download it. You can sell it even if you are crazy enough, you know. And also all the social media, everything belongs to you. Now, what happens? Well, you have it. I have this analogy of having a backpack, you know, and all the data is there, right? You're running around with your data, you know. And now when you log in to any service, they might ask you, hey, you know what? Can you tell us how many miles you have driven with your car in the last year? And I'm like, my wallet knows this information. Sure, take it, right? Because you get 10% off or whatever you get. Now, the companies will get even more data, right? Because I'm running around with it, right? And now it's just one click away from opening it up for them. Whereas this data was never available for them before. But now that we digitalize everything, you know, we put everything on chain, right? It's all owned by us. Sure, we have control who we give it, but there is more data we can give in the first place. And now you can see the idea of the state actually being mega interested for you to own your data because they can get access to it, because they can ask you, hey, for social insurance, if you want to pay less, you have to give access to this, right? And you will do it, right? Because you pay less. So, you know, and if you mess it up, well, tough luck. So I think it's exactly the same idea. First, they are afraid, then they see the benefits, and then they give us pseudo control, you know, about it.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating to see you explain it that way. And one of the things, as you were talking about Web 2 and how the early days of the internet had something very similar in terms of how things panned out, the example that comes to my mind is Wikipedia, right? So when Wikipedia was starting, there was all of this discussion about how just having all the information freely available would put, you know, companies out of business. Like, people wouldn't want to take courses anymore. People wouldn't want to go to school and get a degree anymore. And what's happened is, I mean, there's probably still a little bit of that going on where universities and other entities are trying to figure out how they're going to monetize and create value in the next wave of things. But if you look at just objectively, how many people are now able to create courses, how many people are consuming that content, and how that information is getting monetized by individuals, I think there's so much more that we're now getting out of the ecosystem in terms of value versus where it was just a handful of small companies in the past that were maybe at the Web 1 layer, as you explained it. So some really fascinating topics. I want to get into your research process, because I was watching a video that you recently made about randomness in the blockchain and how randomization is something that I think you put it in the context of gamers, like people creating a game that's on like a blockchain. But really this concept of randomness and how, you know, if someone were to throw a punch in a game, it has to be random, right? If you were to do it like 50 million times, etc. I really like your way of describing this. And I immediately started to think about, you know, what that research process might have, how that might have taken place. So I think this is really valuable for anyone that's, you know, a creator or a founder, the ability to tell a story and at the same time get a point across, which you seem to do really naturally. I think it's a valuable skill that any creator or founder can cultivate. Do you want to kind of walk us through what your research process looks like as you're researching content for a new video? And, you know, feel free to share as much as you're comfortable sharing, but I think we would love to understand, I would love to understand how you come up with these analogies and examples of conveying things across.
Actually, it's fascinating talking to you because you mentioned some things that a lot of people mentioned to me, but just now I figured something out because of you. Maybe it's random, but thank you. So, and you said analogies, you said explaining it in a natural way or so. And I think that's I want to try to explain, I don't know, right? But I will try to explain why that might be the case, because I don't really know exactly why. But let me start at the beginning when you said, mentioned my randomness video. So I think like anyone who does anything on the blockchain, in my opinion, must watch this video, okay? But not many people have watched this video because, and here's the fun thing, because it's boring. But not, I mean, it's not boring the way I did it, but it's boring for, they think it's boring. They don't need this, what the hell, right? For random numbers, well, I don't care, right? But it's so important. And I hope that this video in the next 2 years or so, because it will still be relevant, okay? There is no other solution than what I mentioned in that video. It will go nuts, this video, okay? Because you have to know how to do random numbers, because otherwise you can't create anything that is entertainment, right? Entertainment is a bit random, yes? So you play a game, it doesn't always do the same thing, all right? It tries to be cool, you know, and give you new, exciting things to solve, and there is randomness there. I know people don't realize because it just works, but if you want to do that on the blockchain, it's impossible without what I said in the video. And the reason for that is that the blockchain is not made for that, okay? We're just using it for that, but it's not. So why I mentioned the game is because I developed a game for, you know, playing around, right, with the blockchain. So I developed a game to learn coding, yes, and to learn the what you can and what you cannot do with the blockchain. And I figured out, wait a minute, if I do this thing in a random way, then how, well, you know, I have to, how would I do that, right? So there was a situation where there were two characters fighting each other, you know, and I wanted, you know, the outcome to not always be the same. and then suddenly you have to figure stuff out. And then I figure out, wait, there is no way to do randomness on the blockchain without magic, because the blockchain has to be deterministic. And I explain in the video, because otherwise the other nodes, they cannot come to consensus. They would have all, they will all come to different results, and they will never agree on any block, you know. And that would be pretty bad. By the way, that's exactly what happened to Solana last time it crashed. They had a randomness issue with a plugin kind of thing, and they all had different results, and they couldn't produce a new block, you know. So they turned it off. Yes. So every application that used that was not working anymore. Oops. Solana is strange. Anyway, and so the randomness video, I have to say, is from my own experience. I was playing around. I was figuring this out, and I know from my 18 years of code, of tech experience, right, that randomness is very, very important, but it was not hard to create, because you just type in your programming language math.random and you get a random number because your processor is doing it. I think I didn't explain that in the video, but it's so easy in the normal life outside of blockchain. It's no problem, right? Yeah. You can do it. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is because there is no reason for having consensus, right? Every machine is independent, doing something in the background. You don't even see the code, right? Because it's usually somewhere on Amazon. You don't even have access, right? Anyway, long story short. So that's why I made this video. But it's so technical, right? It's just for the developers of the blockchain. Well, not many people out there, yes, that develop blockchain. But it's super important. Yeah. So for me, I talked to my wife, and I have to tell you, my research process includes my wife. Yes. I talked to my wife. I said, listen, I have these two video titles that I could be doing. And she said, this one is boring and this one sounds more interesting, but both of them are boring. I'm like, damn. And the most boring one was the random number thing. And my thought process was, and it don't learn from me, okay, in this case, because it has only 200 views or something, which is really bad for my videos. But like I said, it would go ballistic once people learn developing blockchain. They will need to watch that. So I said, listen, I have a talk, I have two talks at the conference, and this video will be actually pretty cool to have when I'm there, so I can, because those were developers that I was talking to at the conference, and I can point them to it and I can say, hey, you know, I know what I'm talking about and stuff. And that's why I created that video, because it fits to my schedule, right, of where I will be physically and stuff. But other than that, any other video, you should not do it like this, okay? You should basically watch some cool YouTube channels that show you how to do YouTube. But basically, you should use a tool. You have to use a tool. I use vidIQ now. And you go there and you basically do keyword research. And you spend the whole day on that, okay, honestly. And then you figure out, okay, which keywords fit to your, obviously, your stuff. And then you try to overlap. It's a Venn diagram, right? Where you have one circle is what people care about, right? Or what they search about. And it overlaps with what you care about, right? What you want, right? And exactly the cross-section of those, that's where you should create videos. and pray to God that that's also what works, right, on YouTube, because, you know, it's an algorithm that we don't know the code, right? So yeah, we have to guess. And my research process basically is either sometimes very analytical, and sometimes I just want to do the video, okay, because I care about it, and that's good enough for me, because the channel has my name, right? So I do what I care about, yes? So obviously I want to help people, but if that one video or the second video, you know, is not going nuts, I'm fine, whatever. It's just for fun. So my real job is actually consulting and coding, right, for projects in the background. Yes, yeah, so the videos, like, YouTube is not my main thing, because I don't think that would be feasible at this point. You know, I hope it might be, but it's not yet. Yes, so I have to do some other stuff as well, especially in the bear market. You know, so I've talked about a lot of things now, but what I didn't answer is how do I explain stuff in a way that makes any sense? Just quickly, I love analogies. I don't know why. I think it's communication skill. Like, it's easier for me to explain to you something complex with an analogy. So I save time, you save time, everyone is happy, right? But I think this is kind of the thing.
Yeah.
And I'm a very nerdy guy. So I led teams of 30, 40 people. And so I had to learn how to communicate efficiently also between mega different, you know, cultures, right? Very, very different people. So it was hard to get them all to understand the same thing. So I started doing two things. One, visual communication, a lot of diagrams, a lot of visuals to explain everyone the same thing. And then analogies, right, so they understand it even better. So I kind of did that naturally. And now I continue doing that, what I learned in my day job.
Yeah, that's amazing. I think those were some really tangible tips that I think a lot of us can take and apply to our everyday life, especially the part about researching a space before you go after it. Because, and I want to pivot to no-code a little bit now, because a lot of the creators that are in the no-code ecosystem are thinking up ideas that they feel are important to them. And just because they can use a no-code tool to build it, they're doing these projects, which is great for practice. But if you really want to do something that is valuable for a large group of people, you need to actually apply some method to that process and try to come up with ideas that actually resonate and maybe validate them up front. One of the videos that you did that was actually, I don't know if it's the most popular video or not, but there's one video that's really popular that's about how to create an Instagram clone very easily using no code. And I think you use Adalo to create all of this, all of these different screens, and you have a really great way of explaining the process. So I would highly recommend anyone that's listening to go check out that video if you want to start creating apps straight away, like within an hour. Tell me a little bit more about how you're thinking about the no code ecosystem. And I have a view on this, obviously, being a little bit in the space for the past year. I have a feeling that most tools are eventually going to just become no-code tools, and it's not going to be a thing that we delineate from you know, coding or programming in general. There's still going to be use cases that require advanced programming, but for a vast majority of the basic use cases, we will have companies that make their name off of simplifying things for the end user, because that's where you get the most sort of amplification of value. So what do you feel about where the no-code ecosystem is right now? And if there's someone new that's just discovering no-code tech, what's your like number one tip to them?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think every tool will become a no-code tool in one way or another. But they will still be coding, right? Just to be clear, and they will still be coding. But
for sure,
in my world, you know, if I look at the future, right, in my imagination of how the future will be, it will be like this, right? You have a no-code tool that has blocks, and those blocks, they can do stuff, right? Like in Adalo, Bubble, you know, you can drag and drop things in there, cool. And they look good and all, it's all great. But then you want to do something that just can't be done with the blocks that you have already. Now, you go to your developer, maybe you have a few in the company, I hope so, and you tell them, hey, I would need this thing. And they will say, oh, okay, instead of building something mega custom, they build another block that is a block, right? So that's the idea here. Instead of building some custom code and hacking it in there, because they could, right? They build a block they respect the modularity of it, right? So there is another block in the set of blocks. And now everyone, not only me, everyone can use that block now, right? And use that custom functionality from now until forever, right? And so we don't have to go back to any developer, for the same feature ever again. Okay, cool. So why that is amazing is because I don't know how many times I was developing in my life registration, login, password reset, you know? And it's so boring, right? You create a new app, you don't care about this stuff, but you have to do it because it's the basics, right? I mean, you can't, but it's so boring. Let me just create the feature and the other stuff is kind of standard, right? But no. So I think that will be definitely a situation we'll find ourselves in. And there will be multiple tools that are better in mobile, more better in web, better in whatever, in visualizing data or whatever it is. And right now, we are not there, okay? I mean, there are some companies that are trying to do it, but either they're mega expensive because they are for enterprise, or they are not good at all, right? And so now you have this duality of Bubble, which does only web, right, in a good way. And also, they are very old. Like, they are 10 years or older, actually. So they use pretty old technology, oh, yeah. I have to say. And because they already have so many users, they cannot just quickly change, you know, how they do things. It's very slow, right? Because they have so much already going on. Now, and then you have Adalo, let's say, on the other side, which is similar, easy, and just mobile, native mobile apps, right? But then they are lacking a lot of features. I mean, they are cool. I mean, I love Adalo, right? Because it's very, very easy to get started. You get this adrenaline rush. Wow, cool. I can have an app in, you know, a day, or not even a day. You can be faster, right? Yeah. And so that's cool. But it's missing a lot of these logical components. So if this, then that, and then look into the database and do this, right? You can't do that. Where in Bubble, you can. So now what you have is exactly what you don't have in blockchain. Okay, so you have all these companies building what they like best, but what we need as users is a combination, okay? Right? In blockchain, just to the parallel, you can just copy the smart contract codes of both and you can combine them yourself and launch a new product because the code is public, right? But in any normal business, also in no code, the code is not public. It belongs to this company. You cannot do anything other than play their game, right? So if they're slow in developing, well, tough luck for you. You're also slow, right? Because you don't have your stuff. And to wrap it up, every of these tools, they're trying to solve this issue by offering plugins, right? You can create your own plugin. You can pay somebody to do plugins. And then you have, you know, a way to get around this. But that doesn't solve all the issues because, for example, for Adalo, you cannot create a plugin that gives you permission to, for example, the geo-coordinates if they don't have the feature, or to the microphone if they don't allow you, right? So there are limits still. And that's very frustrating, I have to tell you, because, you know, so that's where we are right now. It's 100% the future, 100%, you know, developing will be very much, you know, 80% click, 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 right? And 20% coding something unique.
Yeah, that's so great to see you walk through all of that. A lot of things also starting to make more sense now, because I remember when you brought up the Adalo screen, the first thing that I remember you highlighted was that they give you the login screens by default. Yeah. And I remember you calling that out as such a great thing because you don't have to code that anymore. So a lot of things are making sense now. I want to pivot to something else. I know you're a big coffee guy as well. I see you sipping there. Is that some espresso that you got going there? What do you have going?
Yeah, so listen, I have an espresso here and no sugar, but there is honey inside. I put honey, okay? And it's so good. Okay. Like I tried all the versions with milk, without, with blah. Forget it. Honey, perfect. So that's my custom version, yeah.
Honey and espresso. Okay.
Before you complain, you know, try it out.
For sure. I've seen you talk a little bit about leadership, and I want to get into your background a little bit as we kind of wrap up the conversation, because I think not a lot of people appreciate the fact that you have, you know, decades of experience in the technology space. Do you want to tell us what are some of the important bits that you've started, that you've picked up from your past experience that you're really applying to your life now as a creator? So I'm kind of trying to contrast that with someone that might be a new creator. What are some of the skills that they need to develop, right, if they are to be good at this game?
Yeah. So you are really good at your game because because you talk about leadership and combine it somehow with what I'm doing. And I always tell everyone, hey, on my channel, we also talk about leadership, but I do it only very seldom because I'm so excited about technology. But you found the videos that I did, so congratulations. And why I'm mentioning is because leadership is so important to me. You know, it's even more important than anything else. Okay, because as soon as you have anything going for you, you need people to work for you. Okay, and then you're screwed if you don't know how to manage them, how to motivate them, how to explain stuff. I mean, it's over, right? You will pay more money than you have to. You'll be more frustrated. It will take longer. You know. And I've seen this obviously in my career, and of course I did all the mistakes you can imagine, and more. And so I learned how to communicate, and maybe that's why I want to explain in a good way, because I don't have time to waste, which I did in the past somehow. So basically for me it's so important to put it in the right words, and sometimes I don't manage, yes, but I will try. So communication skills is ultra important for leadership, right? And I have to always honestly tell you, whenever I analyze any company, because they sometimes companies like, hey, can you analyze my company? They are not developing fast enough, or even when they do, the quality is not good and stuff. You know, I look at at the company, and really 99.9% of the time, the issue is with the leadership. Okay, which is funny because they pay me to tell them that they are the issue. You know, so I have to do it in a very nice way. Okay. And so the team is usually cool, you know, they're nice people. Very seldom that there is some crazy person in there that you have to get rid of. You know, very seldom, sometimes. But and then it's only one, okay? I mean, so the problem is really the leadership doesn't communicate, and it's so important. So you cannot just go to your team, you know, and say, or whoever works for you, you know, even if you hire someone on Fiverr, you know, you have to tell them very clearly what you want to have. Yeah. And there is a fine line between giving them the space, the freedom to be creative, but also telling them what is the goal, right? Because, right, so you don't want to control every single step they are doing, because then it's a robot, you know? So that's hard for people because they don't know where the line is, you know? So either they do over managing, you know, like, yeah, and or they do under managing, or they do like, you know, it's a laissez-faire kind of thing. People will know what they're doing. It's fine, you know. And then they get something they didn't expect at all, but that's life. So the line is basically where you tell people what is the mission that you send them on. So the mission is important, yes? What is the mission? You are on a mission right now to achieve this goal. How you do it, it's your problem. I help you every step of the way if you need me, but this is the goal and you do whatever it takes. That's the way to talk to people. Of course, if they are mega junior, that's not the way to talk to them. But usually, you know, you hire professionals, okay? Let them do their own thing, but tell them the goal, all right? The goal is whatever. It's a number, or it's a specific design, or I don't know, the goal, right? How can you quantify that or sketch it, you know, make it clear? And then, so communication skills, I think, is mega important. Empathy, obviously, to, you know, if person have issues or something, you have to feel with them. And really make sure to understand their personal situation. Maybe they are just in a bad spot right now. It doesn't mean they don't know what you're doing. It's just stress, okay? And also make sure to connect with people and know about them, you know, because they're humans, all right? So talk to them, even if it's Fiverr, you know, talk to them about what is their favorite drink. Talk to them about how is it to live in their city. Just create this personal connection, all right, with them, even if it's some stranger, all right? They will love you much more. They will like to work with you again. You know how they are doing, you know. So that's because we're humans, all right? Don't forget that. I mean, and so humans are not machines. And so use them for what they're best, which is creativity. And it's you can motivate them. You can make humans faster and stronger and better by giving them the right impulse, the right motivation. With a machine, you cannot do that, right? The machine doesn't care about emotions. But with a human, that's a very good trick. So you say, we're doing this because it will change the freaking world for the people that we're serving. And if we don't do this, then people have a worse life and we can't, that's not an option, okay? We have to make people's life better. And everyone is motivated, you know? So you have to use emotions as well in the right way. So that's kind of the things that I would say. But there is obviously way more. I try to just put the most important ones for me.
Yeah, I'm so glad that we got a chance to cover it because not many people think about this as they're going learning, picking up no code tools or learning, Web3 tech and so on. They're not really thinking about how do I then apply some of the skills that I will need to motivate others to 10x the output of the organization that I'm trying to create here. So really great stuff. Michael, I had a ton of fun talking to you today. I have to say it's one of the better interviews that I think people have listened to on the podcast. And I wish you tremendous success. And I know your channel is going to continue to grow and grow. Why don't you leave our audience a handoff to where they can learn more about you? And if they have a question or would like to get in touch, how do they reach you?
Yeah, so I think it's best if you go to my YouTube channel, you just search for my name, Michael Yonita, and then you find it very easily. It's my name. And also you go to Twitter, where my nickname is Mizzy. It's a four-letter nickname. I'm very proud of this because I'm on Twitter since 2013. I was just not smart enough to grow my audience because I didn't care, right? But a four-letter nickname. Oh my God, right? So go there, follow me, because it's so hard to create Twitter followers. So, you can help me out. And basically what I really love when people contact, you find contact information on both of these that I mentioned easily. What I love is when people tell me what they're building, where they are stuck, what they're looking for. They want to understand something better. I really love that because I really love to answer, and help them. And when enough people ask me the same question, I will create a video. So, like in any way, if you contact me about whatever you're doing, it will definitely help you and me, right? Because I'm getting inspiration from your questions. So make sure to write and yeah, talk to you soon then.
Amazing. Michael, it was so great talking to you again. Thanks for being on the pod.
You very much for having me.
All right, that was the show. Thank you for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed it and got a ton out of it. If you did, there are two things you need to do. Number one, make sure you subscribe to the show to get notified when a new no-code story drops. And number two, I want to ask you a favor. Who's the one person you know who would absolutely benefit from hearing this story? Text them right now and send them to mynocodestory.com and reference this episode. Maybe they're an entrepreneur, maybe they can use this episode to level up at their job, or maybe they're just someone who loves creating new things. Do it. Subscribe and then send them the text. Make a difference. Thanks again, and I'll see you on the next one.